Committee will come to order. Would everyone please take your seats? We have a lot of people in the room, so I'd appreciate if we could kind of keep the conversation down. And we do have a quorum. Is there a motion on the minutes? Representative Hayden, would you move the minutes for us, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the minutes of our last meeting.
Thank you. Representative Hayden moves the minutes of January 27, 2009. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Minutes are approved. Thank you. Okay, the first order of business, the order of business today is House File 174. Representative Thiessen, if you would please introduce yourself for the tape, and welcome to your committee, and please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Paul Thiessen, and I would move that House File 174 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance.
Okay, Representative Thiessen moves that House File 174 be recommended to pass and go to the Committee on Finance. Okay, Representative Thiessen, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to remind members that we only have an hour again today because of the early childhood event. And so I'm going to be relatively brief and let the testifiers get so that we can hear their testimony about the bill. You know, for the past several years, there's been a lot of us in the legislature, a lot of us in this room that have worked hard on health care reform and hard on making sure that every Minnesota child can see a doctor and a nurse. And in 2007, many of you recall, we actually passed off the House floor a bill that made significant progress toward that end and ultimately ended up insuring 30 to 40,000 more kids. But we still have a lot of work to go on insuring kids as well as ultimately making sure that Minnesotans have access to affordable, all Minnesotans have access to affordable health care. And I know that that principle is an issue I think that binds us, binds everybody in this room. I think we all want to make sure that both kids and every Minnesotan has access to affordable health care. Today there are 80,000 kids who are in Minnesota living without health insurance and just one health care crisis away from a catastrophe for themselves and their family. And that doesn't even count the many, many families with kids and children who, for whom health care takes up an unsustainable portion of their own family's budget. And is even if they have insurance, it's unaffordable and not meaningful. And one of the reasons I'm here today with this bill is that I think, budget crisis or not, that fact remains unacceptable in our state. And even as we kind of start digging into these budget discussions and we see the vision for the state of Minnesota that are being proposed by various folks, we can't lose the sight of the fact that we do have a larger moral, I think, and political obligation to consider all the options and to think through where we need to head over the long term. And that's really what this bill and this hearing, I think, is going to be about today. And it's certainly the case that the current economic crisis has done nothing to diminish the need for legislation that moves forward on making health care affordable. Or having affordable health care available for Minnesotans. Indeed, I would think the state's current economic crisis is the time to act boldly and to really think boldly about these issues. What this bill does is very simple. It creates a single, seamless, voluntary program that provides coverage for children up to age 21 in our state. And it does that by removing many of the barriers we have to getting people insured in this state, children insured in this state. There's a second part of the bill that kind of sets up a process to kind of figure out how we're going to move beyond children to all Minnesotans and what that looks like, but the details of that, except with a few broad parameters, are not specifically spelled out. But in the interim, I think, and the reason we have this bill today is that we can continue to think about and make progress and take steps toward making sure that all children in the state have access to affordable health care coverage. And I would note that one of the things that's really exciting about this bill is that there is a lot of energy building outside the walls of this Capitol. And I think that the people are actually ahead of us on this issue. There's groups represented here, and there's a list in your packet that represent 350,000 Minnesotans who are excited and energized to move forward with this legislation. And that is really who I think I want to turn over the testimony to at this point, because they really have the stories that explain both the need for this bill, the rationale for this bill, and why it's so important for our state. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Thiessen. So our first testifier then will be Linda Slattengren. After that, we have Carol Spector and then Jean Sedgwick, if you can kind of be on deck. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the tape and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Linda Slattengren. I'm a registered nurse of over 30 years' experience, and I'm a president of the Minnesota Nurses Association. MNA joined the Make Health Happen campaign to create a much-needed vision for health care in our state. The coalition behind this campaign represents 350,000 Minnesotans determined to chart a clear path to guaranteed affordable health coverage for all Minnesotans. We believe it can happen. MNA is proud to stand alongside Minnesota AFL-CIO, SEIU, ASME, Education Minnesota, Children's Defense Fund, Isaiah, and Take Action Minnesota to change a broken, costly system that leaves 375,000 residents, including 80,000 children, without health care coverage. The campaign will continue to grow, and we thank our author, Representative Thiessen, for his leadership on this important issue. Nurses know we are not achieving the continuum of quality outcomes our population deserves, and that is despite significant investment in our health care system. Patients in need are systematically denied essential health care services. Too many Minnesotans have no insurance at all because they simply cannot afford it. Others do not qualify for employer-provided insurance or a public program. Many more families, businesses, and individuals may have private coverage now, but face escalating costs and find basic health care services becoming unattainable. In fact, a staggering 240,000 residents now spend more than 25% of their income on medical costs. This economic crisis has clearly revealed deep flaws in our current health care system and is driving people into personal bankruptcies and home foreclosures. Data shows that half of all home foreclosures are due in part to medical debt. This crisis also shines a light on the shaky foundation of employer-based health insurance, which results in many people losing their health security along with the economic security they once had. Patient care is now sidetracked from a cost-effective, preventative public health model to an expensive, chaotic, crisis-based model taking place in our emergency rooms. Let me describe this failed healthcare system to you in real terms. Every day, nurses witness diabetes not monitored, asthma not treated and out of control, high blood pressure leading to strokes. Every day, treatable conditions become costly medical crises. We see an appalling amount of readmissions that could have been prevented with affordable outpatient care. Sadly, the governor's budget recommendations will only deepen the crisis, as tens of thousands more Minnesotans will have their medical safety net severed for the sake of balancing the budget. And sadly, his budget doesn't begin to address the likelihood that thousands more Minnesotans may lose their jobs and health care coverage. What does this say of our state and its ethical priorities? Many of you may ask how we can afford this in a time of budget deficits, but solving the economic crisis must include solving the healthcare crisis. The two are inescapably connected. This coalition has no illusion that fundamentally reforming our healthcare system will be easy, but we do know one thing. We are all paying the cost now in financial terms, employment levels, and in human suffering. We can make health happen through the Minnesota Health Security Act, affordable health care for all Minnesotans, and real security, and starting with our children. There is a human need, there is a public will, and there must be a political will. Thank you. I'd like to now introduce Carol Spector from the Children's Defense Fund to go over the bill.
All right. Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Carol Spector, and I'm the Advocacy and Legislative Affairs Director for Children's Defense Fund, Minnesota. And I would just want to first thank you for the opportunity to be here today. Ensuring that all children have access to affordable quality health care coverage is one of CDF Minnesota's highest priorities, and so that is why I'm very happy to be here today to talk about the Minnesota Health Security Act, which would ensure all Minnesotans have access to health care coverage starting with children. I just want to make a few key points before I get into the details of the bill. First, I want to echo what Linda has said about our ailing health care system. With the unemployment rate nearing 7% and tens of thousands of Minnesotans who have lost their jobs in recent months, it is becoming increasingly clear that our current health care system is not sustainable. I also want to point out, and this is an important point to make, that the uninsured numbers that Linda shared are the most recent numbers that we have, but I think that they are 2006 and 2007 numbers, so they do not capture the recent economic downturn. And the number, the tens of thousands of Minnesotans who are losing their health care with their jobs. I know this committee did hear a presentation on the cost of COBRA and how it is cost prohibitive for probably most, especially in the situation of losing employment. And our public health care programs are riddled with barriers that keep hardworking Minnesotans from accessing coverage. And then I just want to mention one more disturbing trend before I get into the Minnesota Health Security Act as a solution for all of this. And there's a recent report that shows what we've been hearing anecdotally around the state, and that is with the higher cost of dependent care coverage, oftentimes the employee can afford to cover themselves, but parents are having to make the agonizing decision of insuring themselves while leaving their children uninsured. And yet the benefits of ensuring all Minnesotans have health care coverage are undeniable. More than half of people with inadequate health care coverage and two-thirds of those who are uninsured skip needed medical care. Uninsured children are 5 times more likely to have an unmet medical need, and they're 4 times more likely to use the emergency room, which we all know is the most costly care. Children with coverage get important checkups and immunizations. They do better in school. They have fewer long-term health problems, and they are more productive members of our future workforce and society. The long-term savings of insuring children are enormous. And finally, we all pay for the uninsured and underinsured as uncompensated care costs are absorbed by our healthcare system. So the Minnesota Health Security Act is a solution for this. I personally believe that resolving the healthcare problem is one of the biggest things we need to do as a society. And I think that we have to have a lot of healthcare discussions to get there, and we are putting forth the Minnesota Health Security Act as a solution. And under this act, as Representative Cheeson said, all children would be eligible for comprehensive quality healthcare coverage by July 2010. Participation would be voluntary. In order to maximize access to healthcare coverage and services, there are no co-payments or premiums for children. The public programs would be streamlined and simplified. And adults would be insured access to coverage for which they would pay no more than 5% of their income by 2012. The coverage mechanism, as Representative Cheeson also mentioned, would be based on recommendations put forth by a study from the Commission on Healthcare Access. As part of that study, there would be an independent study that would evaluate reforms that would produce greater efficiencies and cost containment in our healthcare system and provide recommendations on moving forward with reforms in our healthcare delivery system. Phase two would also work to, as part of the study, would provide recommendations to work to minimize and reduce health disparities, which Minnesota often we do really well on the high level numbers, but when we dig deeper into the data, we have many, many disparities. And I also just want to recognize that under House Bill 174, the Minnesota Health Security Act, is more children would become into public programs that the provider rates would need to be addressed. We are very cognizant of the deficit and the difficult task of balancing the budget that you are facing, but we contend that it's taking no action that we cannot afford. Ensuring that all Minnesotans have access to affordable, comprehensive health coverage will go a long way towards stabilizing our economy and will create a sustainable health care system. Our current health care system is a lottery. It just depends on where you work and how much you earn, whether or not you have access to health care these days. It is time we create a healthcare system that is affordable, simple, and that creates health security. This new vision for a healthcare system would be like public education for children. All children would have access, no matter where their parents work or how much they earn, and no parent would have to make that decision of not being able to cover their child because of cost. The Minnesota Health Security Act would build on the healthcare reform progress made last year and complete the discussion by ensuring affordable coverage for all Minnesotans. In closing, I want to thank Representative Thiessen for his leadership on this issue, as well as this committee and the many of you who have sat on this committee over the past several years as this issue has been addressed, and for elevating the health care reform discussions and taking that leadership. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Becker. We have a question from Representative Abler.
Thank you. And I don't know if someone's going to give technical questions. This is Ms. Becker is probably the technical expert of the list coming. Is that correct as far as you know? Can I ask
her
questions?
Well, you can ask her, and if she's not able to answer, I guess she'll tell us.
Madam Chair, I'll do my best.
Okay, thanks. And Ms. Becker, we've chatted a good deal about this, and this has been an open project for a while, and the terms of it varies considerably, and it's actually even less specific now. Can you give me an idea about what, is this going to be built on medical assistance, basically, still? Is that what you expect? I see the terms have changed from past versions, but is that kind of what you're thinking in terms of the model?
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Abler, I didn't quite hear you. Building up on top of medical assistance for the base of the program, is that your question?
That's my question.
It would streamline the existing public programs and build on probably medical assistance as the base, yes. Get rid of the barriers.
And I'll try to keep my questions brief. I mean, there's a room full of people and an army of witnesses coming. But do you have some idea about what the fiscal note's going to be, just even in a ballpark? Is it going to be in the hundreds of millions or... If you have an idea, I realize finance would handle those questions specifically, but you might have an idea.
Ms. Becker.
Madam Chair, Representative Abler, we don't have a cost at this time. And what I can say is the proposal is designed to maximize the federal match. And as Linda Sargon said before me, we're paying for this already in uncompensated care, in human suffering, in the lack of coverage, in employers who can't afford to offer coverage. But I apologize that I don't have a copy.
And Madam Chair, just one more.
Representative.
And you know, I have a great deal of sympathy for the work you're doing, and I believe in the same goals myself, trying to find ways to help these people out. But I do want to remind you of my ongoing caution that some of the very supporters of the bill who are here in mass today, if they work for a clinic that has to live on the prices that medical assistance pays, or even plus 5 or 10% more, cannot give their workers the benefits that even this program would enjoy. So I think this is a time of opportunity, and I'm happy you're putting your oar in the water, and I hope I can help you. Thanks.
That was more of a comment than a question, but Ms. Becker, did you want to respond to it?
Yes, I would. Thank you. Representative Abler, the reason I think you said that some of the details are less specific than last time around, and particularly on the rate issue, is we know that in order to create a sustainable system that we need to address that issue, and we need to address it properly. We will work with actuaries and go through the proper process, and so that language is in there to indicate that is something that needs to be dealt with in order to make a good healthcare system, but we don't have the details at this time.
Okay. All right. One more question from Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then for the witness, well, then the motion is to move it to finance. So if it's not ready, why are we moving it to finance if it sounds like there's work, a lot of detail that needs yet to be done?
Inspector.
Madam Chair, Representative Emmer. What I would say to that is this process is something that we need to continue to have policy discussions on. And we are putting forth this bill as a vision today so we don't lose sight of the health care reform discussion.
Right. Representative Emmer, and then I'm going to let Representative Thiessen respond. I think he'd like to handle the question.
Well, and I'm sure he would, but this is, we're here, this is the policy committee, and we're putting it forward to discuss the policy. And what I heard Representative Thiessen say in his opening comments, we should keep an open mind, and we should have a discussion about these issues. And it seems to me that if there's a whole bunch of policy, and one of the things that I was saving for the end, and I still will, is it seems to be missing a lot more than just the stuff that you've just referred to, because there's really no definition, unless Representative Thiessen's going to educate me further, about the eligibility requirements and how those will be applied, who will apply them, etc. these are the very policy discussions that I was hoping we were going to have here in this committee.
Representative Thiessen.
Madam Chair, and I think that we can, I think, I don't disagree with you. I think on the payment rate issue, I think the distinction is last year we actually had a specific payment rate increase written into the bill. This year we're actually turning over to the Commissioner of Human Services, I'm assuming, to actually come up with a rate that's going to, well, it says Commissioner. I think it's Human Services. And it defines that in the bill somewhere. So, but that the Commissioner of Human Services would actually work with an actuary to come up with the payment rates that would make sense. So instead of us setting a fee schedule in legislation, we're directed. So it actually addresses that policy issue that I think is being raised in the legislation. We're just handling it in a different way. To that point.
Madam Chair, may I respond
to
Madam Chair, Representative Emmer, and in response to the eligibility and who will determine that, the specifics are in the bill, but they're tied to the medical assistance statute, and so it would be tied to how that is determined under MA in current law.
Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Emmer, I'll give you one more brief one here, and I've got another question here from Representative Brock.
All right. Well, I was hoping that we were actually going to discuss the policy, and this is what's opening up a whole Pandora's box of issues that apparently we want to, with respect to the author, this is one that, so you're telling me that the only difference from MA, the standards, the eligibility standards would be that children who would fit the definition of being a non-citizen or an illegal immigrant would now qualify under this program. That's the only difference between the eligibility requirements under MA?
Who wants to take that one?
Well,
Representative Thiessen.
Madam Chair, that is one change. I mean, the other change, I don't know if what you define as eligibility, is that under MA it's 150% of poverty or less, and this would obviously increase that. I don't know if you consider that an eligibility issue or not. But
And Madam Chair, I absolutely do. In the interest of time, this is the issue that hopefully this committee was going to address the details of the policy. But I understand that we're under a limited time frame today. And
well, I mean, so just to specifically ask that question, so it is that issue that you raised about undocumented folks and the issue that this would not limit kids to 150% of poverty or less, but would be open to all kids.
And Madam Chair, if we're going to have the discussion, then Representative Thiessen, would the household gross household income have any bearing?
No.
Representative Thiessen, okay.
So a family could make $150,000 or more as their gross income in this this program, the proposal would apply.
Madam Chair, their children would be covered just like they can go to a public school and not pay anything.
Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen, so is there any incentive in the, or disincentive, depending on whose point of view you're looking at, for a family that has the financial means and the responsibility for their children to provide health care insurance for their children?
Representative Thiessen.
Madam Chair, it's voluntary to join this program, but the, you know, I would assume the, much of the financial incentive, both for employers and for families, unless you want a particular kind of health care that wouldn't be covered here, I don't know what that would necessarily be. There would be an incentive to move into this program, and I think one of the issues that we're looking at is the model and the vision that's being laid out here is that at least for kids, because of all the ripple effects that comes from making sure that children have health insurance, that we ought to start thinking about health insurance for kids as we think about public education. And, you know, in public education, some people do opt out and choose to go to private schools. So I don't know how that would play out here, but, you know, there are examples there. I guess the other thing I would say with regard to this, in terms of the economic impact, the larger economic impact, and we do know that two things. One is that even at relatively high incomes, which is also to the people, obviously, you know, there's not that many people that are $150,000 in a family or more in this state. But for most people, health care is becoming, especially dependent care coverage, because that's where a lot of the cost shift goes to, are having a harder and harder time paying for it. And if businesses are freed from the cost of dependent care coverage, they actually have more resources both to cover the cost of their actual employees with the resources within the business, and I would argue actually save money for that business. You know, we pay for this one way or another, and it's kind of, but the bottom line is your insight was correct.
And okay, Representative Bremer. Okay, one more, and then I'm going to go to Representative Brad.
And this is for the witness, Ms. Spector. You indicated that the current, and I wrote it down. The quote was, "The current healthcare system is not sustainable." I'm interested to know: are you talking about the government healthcare system as it now exists, or the private market? Which one?
Ms. Spector.
Madam Chair and Representative Bremer, I'm referring to an employer-based healthcare system.
Okay. Representative Brock.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I think I'm just following along with some of the concerns that Representative Emmer is stating, and I hope that we have continued discussion. I expect that we probably will along the way. You know, in terms of pulling people out of a private market and putting them into a public market, what are the impacts in terms of cost shifting? What are the impacts in terms of pulling all these relatively inexpensive kids, inexpensive to insure kids out of the public system? What is that going to do to the cost of insurance for everybody else in the state? Is a significant policy change and a significant financial as well as policy discussion. But what I'm looking at and what I'm trying to understand is there's no income levels at all. So people who can afford health insurance right now who happen to have copays could go into the system and have no copays. Am I understanding that properly? So there's maybe I'll just leave it there. Is that how I'm understanding? Am I correct?
Madam Chair, correct.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So, Madam Chair,
all right.
The policy discussion that we probably want to tee up is. You know, we hear a lot about overutilization of the system and people having skin in the game in terms of the decisions they make to go to the doctor. Just in a rough sense, it's cheaper to go to the doctor to get Band-Aids than it is to go to the grocery store because they're $2.29 at the grocery store, but they're free at the doctor. Is that fair?
Well, one would be free at the doctor.
Well, good point, because I don't know that I've ever used just one.
I've never done that either, but
being somebody who probably ended up with 10 on that same injury, but the point is not meant to be totally facetious. No. But when you have no skin in the game and you have no need to make even those value judgments over whether your child needs to be there or whether it's easier just to go. I think those are really big policy discussions, but I hope that we don't just run by because overutilization and actual proper use of the healthcare system is something that I think we all have been talking a lot about and should continue to talk about, and I'm concerned that this is going in the wrong direction in that regard and a variety of others.
Okay, thank you, Representative Broad. Your metaphor is particularly apt here. I'm going to go to Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, since we're talking about policy here, and obviously this is throwing front and center the whole issue of, do we put more people on government programs or do we try to make the private market work better? Do we try to let state government or government in general provide more and more and more services for people, or do we try to give them their own capabilities, their own options, and that can even go as far as resources, economic development, and those sorts of things. But all of that aside, focusing on the bill, this is accessible by all children in the state of Minnesota, correct? Mm-hmm. Madam Chair and yeah. Representative Thiessen?
Correct.
How many is that?
Representative Thiessen or Ms. Spector?
Madam Chair.
I don't know what number. It's under a million people. But what's the number of kids under 21?
Oh, Madam Chair, I just know the number. I actually, let me get back to you with that. Representative Douglas.
Okay.
Madam Chair and testifiers, so this is for people under 21. In the state of Minnesota, we have from 0 to 11, almost 800,000, almost a million kids. So
Well, when we talk about the cost, part of why we're, where we're at with our budget situation right now is the dramatic expansion of eligibility. And can we afford that? You've got, just from 0 to 11 years of age, you've got 800,000 kids in the state of Minnesota. And this goes up to 21. So, you know, we can start doing the math a little bit. I know you don't have a fiscal note yet, but if you're going to say there's no contribution, as Representative Broad was indicating, no skin in the game, utilization is going to be an issue. You're going to push a lot of people who are currently on private coverage into taxpayer-funded coverage at tremendous expense to the state at a time when we may be $6, $7 billion in deficit in the next couple of months. With all due respect, what are you thinking?
Well, I think what I'm thinking is that the current system that we have right now is unsustainable in the private sector as well. I mean, someone asked the question, is this in the private or the public sector? I think our healthcare system as a whole is unsustainable. And as was pointed out, 240,000 families or people in the state are paying 25% of their income. I don't think that the private solutions that we've looked at have been working, to be quite honest. And at least the employer-based system. Okay. So, I mean, I think that the answer to your question is yes, this is moving people into the public program, but I don't think we can focus solely on the fact that the growth in the public programs are unsustainable. I mean, I think that is an issue of how we allocate our resources. And the unsustainability that we see in the public programs, to the extent that that growth is there, is reflected equally or worse in the private sector. And so I would that would be my answer to that question.
Okay, members, we are a little short on time today. We have to be out of here at 1:45, so we have about 25 minutes. So this is a very important discussion and very important philosophical discussion, but I've got some more members with questions or comments, and we have a lot more testifiers, so I'm going to move on now to Representative Murphy.
Yes, Madam Chair. I have a comment and then two questions, and I am so glad that the phrase skin in the game came up in the hearing, because we hear that a lot, and we talk about skin in the game in terms of financial skin in the game, and I just want to call attention to the health consequence, or lack thereof, as skin in the game. I understand that we talk a lot about people's financial interests, but when you think about a family who doesn't have coverage, they have skin in the game as well, and it's the absence of help when they get sick and don't have a place to go. That's my comment. This time I got to say that. That's so good. So this is a question for Representative Thiessen and maybe for Ms. Spector. And I'm wondering, because we're talking about this, and I do think we're having a very fundamental policy discussion about coverage in the private versus public. Can you help me understand the cost cycle that occurs for someone who is uninsured and gets care? Because we make this differentiation between the private versus the public, and we don't want to expand the public as if we can contain costs. And I think that's a false argument. And I would like it if you could help me understand where we're seeing the costs for the people who don't have coverage, private or public, please.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, the number one place we are seeing those costs would be in the emergency rooms and the increase in uncompensated care. That cost has been shifted into the rest of the healthcare system, and that is one of the key drivers in the healthcare costs right now. So I think that it is to the benefit of all of us to ensure that everyone has health care coverage to eliminate that cost cycle. And if I could just add also that people wait until they do not get preventive care, and they wait until they absolutely have to get emergent care, and that is also the most expensive care.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. So the cost shift that occurs, does that end up, do we see that expressed in premium increases or tax increases when we have a population of people that don't have coverage who end up getting care? Does that get shifted out to the public, the population in that way?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, it would be ultimately in premium increases. I think it's cost of services, cost of goods, and then ultimately into premium.
And Madam Chair, just that point, I think the last research I saw on this indicated that as of, well, next year, the projection, 2010, over $600 per individual who has private market insurance is paying for uncompensated care.
Okay. And Madam Chair, just one
just
follow-up.
Real briefly, Representative.
It's super brief now. This is for Representative Thiessen, because the question of utilization came up, and I do think utilization payment are two very important parts of the healthcare reform discussion that we've already embarked on. So I'm wondering if you can talk to me a little bit about how this policy fits in with the healthcare reform that we began to enact last session, and in particular when I think about healthcare home and utilization or payment reform and cost containment, if you can address how these, if these fit together, please.
Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, I think that the healthcare reform work, the work that we did last year, fits with this as well as with anything. It fits very well with this. And I think that's a very good point about utilization, is that there are other ways to control utilization other than making people, putting up barriers, basically, to accessing care. And I would also suggest that the use of premiums and co-pays in particular with children is a very different issue than it is with adults in terms of healthcare behavior. But to answer your specific question, the healthcare reforms we did last year, whether it's healthcare homes, coordinating care, payment reform, giving doctors and patients the incentive to work together, all that I think handles utilization very effectively and would certainly fit within the parameters of this bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative Murphy. Members, I have three members on the list here, but we have a number of testifiers who came down specially today for this bill. So if it's okay with those who are on the list, I've got Huntley, Abler, and Gottwald. I'd like to hold those if we could and let our civilians, so to speak, testifiers get a chance. So we've got Gene Sedgwick, then we've got David Sumnick, and we've got Lynn Sherman, if you can all kind of be ready to go. Then David Minar. So we're going to ask you to please be very brief, and welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jean Sedgwick, and I am a proud and very proud to be the school nurse in St. Paul Public Schools, and I was honored to have been chosen as the Minnesota School Nurse of the Year this past year. In a society that pledges to leave no child behind, we are not doing very well, and we're not doing a very good job at all at keeping those very same children from falling behind with their health care coverage. We need to be there to help them to be healthy and stay in school so that they can achieve academic success. For many of our children, the school nurse is the primary health service professional. School nurses across Minnesota believe that children who are uninsured and underinsured are the number one challenge that they face daily. This is the priority issue for the School Nurse Organization of Minnesota. As you have heard, there are over 80,000 children in Minnesota without health insurance, and this number is growing as their parents continue to lose jobs in record numbers. I'm sure that you've heard all these numbers before, and so what I would like to do is share some stories that will put a face on some of these numbers for you. These are actual children that we see every day. We have a 14-year-old 7th grader who was just diagnosed with type 1 diabetes this past April. His mother works as a housekeeper but cannot afford family coverage. This student often misses his insulin, and the school nurse has needed to get samples of insulin from doctors. He takes less insulin to make it last longer, and he does not test his blood glucose levels except at school because he cannot afford the strips to test at home. He had MA for 4 months while he was under child protection, but now child protection will no longer pay his MA. His mother has applied for Minnesota Care, but they are still waiting. He is having increased behavior issues at school. These may be directly related to his fluctuating glucose levels. He is also at higher risk for health complications later in his life due to the poor control that he is having now. We have another child, a 17-year-old, whose mom is working in the schools as an educational assistant, but who cannot afford the family health coverage. This student missed a lot of school related to her diabetes and her lack of medication and glucose testing supplies. She just dropped out of school this past winter break. We have a 9-year-old who was prescribed a medication to treat his ADHD. He was showing great improvement at school until his mom lost her job and could no longer afford his medication. He is now having great difficulty focusing and completing his schoolwork and is now showing signs of depression because of work failure.
Okay, Ms. Sedgwick, I have to ask you to kind of wrap up.
Okay,
if you could.
Okay. In addition to all of these kids with the chronic health concerns that you have just heard, we have a lot of kids that come in with dental caries and ear infections, other kinds of issues that they still come to school, but they are exhibiting signs of pain and discomfort. They're not able to hear the lessons that are given to them at school. What we feel is that these children are going to be growing up. They're missing essential pieces of their education now. They're going to be growing up, and we're going to be perpetuating a cycle that we've already begun with them not being able to afford to get good jobs, not being able to afford insurance in their future, and continuing to have the same problems that they're experiencing now as kids. Our students deserve better than this. This act would provide comprehensive care for our students, dental, vision, and medical. And so we feel that it's very important that we pass the Minnesota Health Security Act this session. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today, and on behalf of the School Nurses of Minnesota, I extend an invitation to each one of you to contact your school nurse in your district so that you can come to a school and visit and find out what's happening to our kids.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, David Sumnich. And as testifiers come up, please be ready to come up so we can move along quickly. And I would also ask you that if you have testimony that's repetitive, that you'd please try to pare that down if you can, just in view of the time, so we can give everybody a chance. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Madam Chair, honorable members of the committee. My name is David Sumnick. I live in Richfield, and I've owned my own business since 1983. As part of that, I've operated Advantage Payroll in Edina and provided health insurance coverage for my employees as a fully paid benefit since I started the company. The companies that I serve are about 400 or so, and they're all small businesses. They represent about an average of about 14 employees, although some of them are larger. It's been my commitment to my company to completely cover the employees' cost of health and dental insurance since I started offering employee staff that work more than 30 hours a week. Over the years, this has made insurance coverage affordable for my employees' families and given them the opportunity to even add children to their coverage who would not have been otherwise covered. In order to have enough participants to qualify, I included myself in the employee's pool, even though I could get less expensive coverage under my wife's work plan. In the past 6 years, I've dropped my coverage and returned to my wife's plan in the face of increasing annual premiums in the amount of 25 to 33% per year for my coverage. The coverage that I switched to with my wife was the exact same coverage, the same company, but it was significantly less because I was in a larger pool. Most of these small companies, the average that I said was 14, are in those small pools and create those small pools, and we pay much higher premiums than others. This is the way that I could keep my commitment I made over to cover my employees without requiring an employee contribution. In an environment of bailout and huge tax breaks for mega banks and companies that are laying off thousands of employees, small businesses who have been able to maintain their business and commitment to employees see this legislation as a way to keep our workforce healthy and intact. Not all small businesses are able to make this and keep the commitment to health insurance that I have so far. This legislation offers some small businesses a way to protect children, the children of their employees' families, in some cases keep those families out of financial crisis. Small businesses know their employees on a personal one-on-one basis, and we know when their families need health services. Healthy children need more productive employees. This legislation is not a bailout, but a way to keep health care costs reasonable for the most stable workforce in the state, employees of small businesses. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sumnick. Okay. We have Lynn Sherman, and then David Minar, then Bethany Gladhill, and Barbara Thomason. So if you could all be kind of ready to go. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Lynn Sherman. I'm the co-owner of the Cold Spring Bakery in Cold Spring, Minnesota, and a member of IBEA. Our bakery is a small business with 65 employees. As a part of our commitment to them, all full-time employees are eligible for health insurance coverage. In the year 2000, our baker's helper Diane died from cancer after a whole year of treatment and hospitalization. As a result, our insurance premiums doubled over the next few years. For a small business in a competitive market, these increases are extremely difficult. In order to continue to provide health insurance, we've had to move to a $2,500 deductible policy with a health savings account. And for our employees, who now pay a higher deductible and receive less coverage, our insurance program only works for those who don't need to use it. Last fall, my highest paid employee, whose wife has a chronic condition, dropped his insurance plan because the high deductible doesn't cover needed medications. He cannot afford to pay his portion of the family insurance and still pay for her medication each month. His children now have no health insurance coverage. As an employer, I need to protect the interests of all my employees and remain profitable. I'm struggling to maintain a balance between paying fair wages and providing health insurance. Should I lay off some employees so that the others can have better health insurance? Or should I join the 70% of small businesses who can no longer afford to provide insurance for their employees? I shouldn't have to make that decision. We should have a health insurance system in this state that works. That's why I'm here supporting the Minnesota Health Security Act and hope that the legislature passes it this session. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairman. We've got David Minot. Welcome to
the
committee.
Actually, I'm not David, but I was asked to move forward.
Okay, please introduce yourself.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I am Bethany Gladhill. This is my husband, Patrick, and our 11-month older daughter, Beatrix. We're here today to tell you why passing the Minnesota Health Security Act is so urgently needed. After Patrick's paternity leave last year, he chose not to return to his job. His duties have shifted substantially, and that, plus longer hours, an hour-long commute, and high gas prices, made him decide to reestablish a small computer consulting business. However, we got our benefits through his work. I work for a small theater company and don't have benefits. And the COBRA, at $1,500 a month, was close to what I was actually making at that point in a year. We worked with an insurance broker, signed up for a high-deductible plan, originally through Blue Cross Blue Shield. However, BCBS denied our daughter due to a minor congenital heart defect she was born with. It's a real shock to get a statement from an insurance company with your daughter's name on it in big black letters saying denied. We finally got her on the Minnesota High Risk Plan and us on a separate plan. Her plan runs at about 120% of the average rate. Now we pay almost $400 a month under the first plan for the two of us, plus another $200 a month for her. We have a $4,800 deductible for us and a $2,800 deductible for her, which we blew through in one fell swoop during heart surgery for her last week. That's almost $15,000 a year, slightly less than what we were paying under COBRA, and somewhere between 25 and 35% of our annual income. Since it's so new, we're still not sure even what's covered and what's not. It makes us feel extremely vulnerable. I urge you to pass the Minnesota Health Security Act so families like mine can know the security of having affordable, comprehensive health care coverage for their children.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We are up to Barb Thomason. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Barb Thomason. I'm a member of Grace University Lutheran Church and a leader with the Isaiah Health Organizing Team. I'm a grandmother, I'm a mom, I'm a teacher, I'm a person of faith. I'm here today because I love kids. I love them so much that I have spent over 40 years of my life working with and for young children and their families. And really, I would rather be sitting on the floor with a 20 preschoolers than sitting here today. So why am I here today? Part of that is this is a risk for me. I'm here today because it breaks my heart to think about children that I know who are sick, and their moms are sitting up at night worried about the cost of taking their child to the doctor the next day. Some people think that this is somebody else's problem, that there are handfuls of families slipping through the cracks. But this is not the case. You've heard the numbers of the uninsured children in our state. And for you to visualize this, think of our new Gopher football stadium, which is just down the street from the church where I worship. We could fill that stadium and still have close to 30,000 children standing outside. Two of those kids are my grandkids. The parents of these 77,000 plus kids are losing sleep at night. I lose sleep at night. I'm sure some of you are losing sleep at night, worried about these children. At least I hope you are. As a person of faith, I know that each one of these children is a child of God. We all are. When one of us is suffering, we are all suffering. I'm telling you that those 77,000 plus children filling up that stadium cannot wait one more day. They cannot wait one more minute. I urge you to answer the call and do what needs to be done for the children of Minnesota. Please vote in support of the Minnesota Health Security Act. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. To the members and the audience here, we are going to go a little bit past the time, so we're going to try to get the opponents in, and we've got Danette Coleman, and I would ask Stacia Smith to come up as well. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Danette Coleman. I'm responsible for public policy at Medica and today representing the Council of Health Plans. And I'd like to first start out by saying we absolutely support the goal of this legislation. The Council of Health Plans, which represents the 8 nonprofit health plans in the state, has done a number of things working with the Children's Defense Fund over the years to do more to get kids covered. It is absolutely unacceptable that the states have children who do not have access to health coverage. Just a quick example of that, my daughter who goes to elementary school just came home last week with a letter saying she confirmed cases of chickenpox at her school. This is not only an issue of the individual child's health, but this is a public health issue. That those children are likely uninsured and did not receive the vaccine. So also the Council of Health Plans earlier this year made a significant investment of $450,000 for outreach efforts across the state to get at the 78% of these uninsured children that we know are eligible for government programs, and we need to find a way to get them in the programs. So I am not here at all to oppose anything that anybody has said. Absolutely, we need to cover our children. Here's our crux and our concern with this legislation. If you remove the children from the existing risk pool, what will happen for the individuals who stay in that risk pool is our actuaries have looked at the numbers. Their premiums will go up 15% because the children, they use fewer services, they're a healthier population, and they do what insurance is intended to do, which is spread the risk across a large number of people so more people can afford. So these people who came to speak before me about the horrific stories of not being able to afford health insurance, that's exactly our cause, is that we will create a scenario where we're pitting one group of people after another, and we're going to increase the number of the uninsured in those, the adults, who remain in the individual, or rather, in the fully insured market, both small employer and large employer. So we will continue to work with this committee. I know we'll have opportunities to talk about our concerns with some of the proposals that have been in cutting eligibility, but this is not the way to do this. We will harm another group of people. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Stacia Smith. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify in this committee. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce is the largest business advocacy organization in the state. We represent over 2,700 members, 80% of which have 100
or fewer employees, so are considered small businesses. And as Ms. Coleman noted, taking so many children out of the fully insured market may lead to a huge increase in premiums. Many small and medium-sized employers are already struggling to offer health insurance, and so this is a huge concern for us. We are also anxiously awaiting how this bill would be funded, considering the budget situation. Without any income eligibility limits to this program, we would raise concerns about expanding a government program to all income levels, particularly during this crisis.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, members, thank you. And Twyla Brace, yes.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Twyla Brace. I'm president of Citizens Council on Healthcare. And our mission is to support patient-doctor freedom, medical innovation, and the right to a confidential patient-doctor relationship. We definitely see problems in today's healthcare system, even the employer-sponsored one, and especially the managed care one. But while House Bill 174 seems on the surface like a boon to children, the bill actually threatens the security of children and families. The Minnesota Health Security Act would implement socialized medicine starting with the children, and then, as noted in Sections 15 and 16, move to all adults, impacting their parents as well. Socialized medicine or government-run health care only promises coverage. It does not guarantee care. And in fact, by forcing children into managed care organizations and capitated payment systems, as noted in Section 9, and by imposing surveillance and practice controls on the providers of medical services, as promised in Section 12, this bill threatens every child's ability to get the very individualized medical services they may need. In fact, the only children protected from the dual controls of government and managed care are the disabled and the blind. Every other child will be under the controls of people who do not even know their name, let alone their individual needs. No child or parents of a child should feel secure simply because they have coverage. I think it pays to remember that the devil is in the details. It's certainly clear by the creation of an ombudsman on page 5, line 23, and the requirement of grievance procedures on page 4, line 19, that unhappy parents and children are already expected. Four more quick things. First, one question for the author. I just wonder if Representative Thiessen can guarantee that there will be doctors and dentists for all these children who are willing to take it. As I recall, it's a problem in the dentist for Medicaid. Number two, page 3, line 1 says there will be no enrollee premiums or cost sharing. That language is fraught with moral hazard, establishing a broad and extensive entitlement program. Number three, I note on page 5, line 12, that the Department of Human Services may but does not have to contract with more than one health plan to run this program. Thus, this language could lend itself to moving toward a single-payer health care system, especially when you add in all the adults. And number four, on page 7, line 1, the bill mentions that health care must be affordable with a guarantee that the family share of premium costs and cost sharing in total does not exceed 5% of family income. But I don't believe that this actually talks about the additional tax burden that will be on families to pay for the cost of the program. I figured out that a family making $20,000 would be paying $86 a month. Well, if you consider what we all pay now for health insurance, that extra money has got to come from somewhere, and it's going to come from taxpayers. So in conclusion, we do not believe that creating a socialized health care system for children is a good idea for children, parents, or taxpayers. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Brace. I am going to go back to the members that I cut off before and see if they want to make their comment or ask their question now. Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair and members, just 2 weeks ago I was at home, and a person I had known for 30 years called me about another matter, and then she started telling me about her son, who had moved down to the cities here, has a college degree, works for a computer company. They have a 2-year-old daughter, and they have health insurance. And they felt a little lump on the daughter's back, and they took her to the doctor, and it turned out she had a tumor on one of her kidneys, which had to be removed, and then she needed about 3 months of chemotherapy. And even though they had insurance, they had to file for bankruptcy because they couldn't make the co-payments and the deductibles that they were charged with. So this bill would fix that problem, at least for that family. There's a guy that did everything he should do in life, and he had to file for bankruptcy.
Thank you, Representative Huntley. Representative Abler.
Not here.
Okay. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to point out, as we're having this policy discussion on this bill, I believe Hawaii did a very similar thing. Where we have seen expansion of government programs, especially government programs in the state of Minnesota that don't pay providers what their costs are, we are not, in fact, giving kids free health care and finally doing right by them. We are shifting dramatic amounts of money to other people. And when we do that, we make it less affordable for them to get health care. So as long as we're having a full and honest and open disclosure about what this policy is all about, where this was done in Hawaii, they can't afford it anymore. They're trying to unload it and move some people back into private health coverage. This happens over and over again. We agree on the policy that we want to cover all kids. There's nobody around this table who doesn't think a kid deserves health care coverage. But we run into issues of how are adults signing these people up for the care they're already eligible for, and how do we solve that? That's not addressed in here anywhere. And we deal with this cost issue over and over again. We have an unsustainable growth in public programs right now. I've got doctors calling me right now about their medical assistance payment levels and the fact that they're going to stop delivering coverage to these people. They're going to stop being able to deliver care to these people because they can't afford it. And those who are parts of systems where they can afford it, they afford it by cost shifting. So make no doubt about it, where public or private coverage is not doing right by the providers, it's not doing right by the people covered, because it is simply shifting the burden elsewhere, and it's going to make the problem worse. In Minnesota, the growth in public programs, and this would be the most dramatic growth I've seen so far, unless somebody wants to correct me, we're going to first open it up to all kids, and we're going to open it up to all adults, we're going to have single payer, everybody's going to be in government health care. And what are the consequences? Everybody's going to be happy and covered? I doubt it. What we will see is a vast exodus of physicians, of specialists. We'll see a dramatic increase in taxes in the state of Minnesota, putting more people out of work, more people who are less able to afford coverage. And in the near term, we'll simply see an increase in private health insurance. The 93% of Minnesotans who currently have coverage, 93% of them, will now see an increase and a lack of affordability. So I am more than happy to salute the goal. But as we sit here trying to do a responsible job of policy discussion, we've got to think about the total consequences of this kind of bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative Gottwald. I'm going to give Representative Peason the last word here, and then we're going to move to a vote. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Bundy, you want to get something quick before we do that?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and no wonder constraints. I just want to add one thing and then add to it. One is that I completely share this goal, not only of universal coverage for all Minnesotans, but guaranteed universal coverage for all Minnesotans, and for that matter, nationally. Every modernized, industrialized country has achieved this to a much greater degree than we have, with all kinds of financial systems, all kinds of mechanisms. We have two problems, though. One is whether, as Representative Peason said, whether it's private or public, it's unsustainable, the growth relative to the growth of the rest of the economy. So we have to change the way we deliver health care. We have to make culturally and politically difficult decisions about how to control costs in health care. And until we do that, the question of who's going to finance it and by what mechanism is really secondary. And we then need to move to that discussion of how we're going to finance it so it's universal coverage for all. But we have, that's a whole other cultural political discussion that's difficult. I fully support and thank you for underscoring the need for us to continue to have this discussion. It's always, ethically, it always has to be at the forefront of our minds as we continue to work on healthcare reform and universal coverage. But I have difficulties, some of them have raised, with specific parts of the policy that would take several hours more of policy discussion.
Okay, we don't have it.
I know
the buns.
And also, as we know, financially, we are going to have, we've passed some health care reform components in 07, 08, which we are going to financially have difficulty even holding on to. Those contain goals for universal coverage in this state
with dates attached to them, and that certain things would happen if we don't reach those goals by those dates, and I fully expect us to revisit all that when those goals are not reached, and of course with the current climate they probably won't be. So I will not be able to support this version at this time in our state's history, but I fully support the continued discussion and all of us having this ethically and politically in the front of our minds as we go forward.
Thank you, Representative Bunn. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, there are several things that have been addressed that I would like to address, but in the interest of time, I'm going to thank everybody for actually a very good policy discussion, and we will absolutely continue this type of policy discussion as we go forward this session, because this, many of the issues that are raised with this bill are going to be raised with a lot of the policy decisions that we're going to have to make going forward. So I thank the members and all the testifiers for coming today and appreciate that.
All right.
I moved to lay it on the table, Madam Chair. I don't believe that we've had adequate discussion about the policy at all. I mean, I just heard it again from the author in support of the motion. Do you want to hear it?
Okay, I think there's a motion to lay it on the table. I think that's a non-debatable motion. It's just an up or down vote. All those in favor of laying this on the table, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The noes have it. The motion fails.
I renew my motion.
And Representative Thiessen, you moved his motion that House File 174 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
The motion fails, and the
thank you, members.
Bill is moves on to finance. Thank you. And we are adjourned.